Today we're looking at the parable of the rich fool. So we're going to be spending most of our time in Luke chapter 12, 13 to 21. And I've titled this sermon, Saving Like a Fool. And hopefully by the end of this talk, you'll know why I've called it that. Who's ever seen an email a bit like this one? Good day. I am Mr. Alfred Chow, the Director for Credit and Marketing, Chong Hing Bank, Hong Kong, Chong Hing Bank Center, 24 Des Vo Road, Central Hong Kong. I have a business proposal of $38,980,369 US. Only for you to transact with me from my bank account to your country. All conformable documents to back up the claims will be made available to you prior to your acceptance and as soon as I receive your return mail, and I will let you know what is required of you. Your earliest response to this letter will be appreciated. Best regards, Mr. Alfred Chow. Who's ever had an email like that? I thought it was a pretty good opportunity. Opportunity of a lifetime. So naturally, I wrote back to him. Good day, Mr. Chow. I've been waiting for an opportunity like this one. Don't bother with the conformable documents. I'm happy to conform without them. How shall we proceed? Best regards, Mr. N. Wilson. Good day. Thank you for your earliest response. If you do not require the conformable documents, this will be a smooth transaction. Please offer your bank name, customer ID number, and password. Best regards, Mr. Alfred Chow. Would you consider using PayPal? I'm concerned for my security. Best regards, Mr. N. Wilson. Mr. N. Wilson, I am a serious businessman. PayPal will not do. If you cannot provide me with the details as requested, I will need to find a different business partner. You have 12 hours. Best regards, Mr. Alfred Chow. Mr. Alfred Chow, you will find I am also a serious businessman. I have three other similar offers in my inbox waiting for my reply. It is you who has 12 hours before I take my business elsewhere. Here are my details as requested. Westpac customer ID 209758817. Password Star Wars Fan 1993. Best regards, Mr. N. Wilson. What does wisdom teach us about this scenario? Am I now the happy owner of a bank account worth tens of millions of US dollars? Probably not. Most of us know that when we get an email like this one, it's a trap. And of course, I didn't really write back to him. I didn't really give him my bank details. I know Katrina was concerned for a second. But we end up, you know, looking a bit stupid if we fall for a trap like this. We know that we probably have no money left in our bank accounts. I look extremely silly. You might think I even deserved what I got for being so naive. Contemporary wisdom tells us not to trust emails like this one. Not the ones that appear in our spam folders. From people that we don't know with offers that are just too good to be true. Wisdom teaches us that. Likewise, Jesus, in his wisdom, warns us to be on guard against all covetousness, which means a craving for material possessions, right? A desire for material things. The desire for wealth and material things is a trap. Let's read what Luke says in 12, starting in 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." All right, so Jesus is here. He's teaching to all these thousands of people in the crowd, too many to handle, and they're all listening to him and what he has to say. And someone in the crowd pipes up and he goes, okay, here's my opportunity. He is a just, righteous teacher. I can finally settle that issue that I've been having with my brother over the inheritance. Obviously, he feels like he's had the wrong thing done by him, that maybe dad wasn't fair in sharing the inheritance fairly. Maybe he didn't get any inheritance at all. And so he goes to Jesus, this teacher who people are listening to, and in a public setting, thinks he can put the pressure on his brother a little bit to finally settle this disagreement. But what does Jesus say? But he said to him, man, who made me judge or arbitrator over you? And he said to them, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Like the promises of online scam artists, the promises of material possessions are too good to be true. If we fall for wealth's trap, we stand to lose everything. We will lose everything. And what are the promises of wealth? Comfort, pleasure, security, safety, long life, independence, happiness, the ability to get what we want when we want, a certain amount of power. These are the things that wealth promises us. We believe the preservation of our lives really depends on this stuff that we accumulate. And Jesus, in his wisdom, according to what he knows, tells us to be on guard against covetousness. He wants us to be savvy. He doesn't want us to fall into these traps. Don't get sucked into this stuff. It's not real. Why? Verse 15. Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Your life is not actually made up out of what you own. And, you know, you might be a skeptic and you might go, well, yeah, I mean, I get what he's saying, but, you know, you need money so you can buy groceries so you can eat. Our lives do rely on our wealth. Our lives do rely on what we do or do not have. But before you continue that thought, I want to just stop that thought, and we'll read the next part, because Jesus goes into a parable which addresses that very concern. Verse 16 to 21. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. So here's a story that Jesus tells. It's about a wealthy guy who accumulates even more wealth. He now has so much grain and so much goods that he doesn't actually have anywhere to put it. His current storehouses are insufficient to contain everything that he owns. So he does what any one of us would do, right? He finds a suitable, safe, secure way of storing everything that he owns. He then says to himself, all right, I can relax now. I can retire. I've got everything that I need for the rest of my life to be safe, to be secure. I've got all the power I'd ever want. I've got all the money I'd ever want. I'm never going to go hungry. All's going to be good with me. The rest of my life is set up. I am set up to live the life that I've always dreamed of. Then God comes into the story and he confronts the man and he says, you fool. And do you know why you're a fool? Because what you don't know right now is that this very night, your soul is required of you, which means to say, tonight you're going to die. What good is all your wealth to you now? What does it count for? We're all fools if we lay up treasure for ourselves and are not rich toward God. We must not forget that every breath we take is actually a gift from God. Every breath we take can't be taken for granted. Our wealth doesn't give us life. Our wealth, our lives do not consist of the wealth that we have. Does wealth guarantee you anything in death? No, it doesn't. It might guarantee you a fancy coffin, but that's about it. Wealth guarantees you nothing in death. And what's the point of Jesus' parable? Is he trying to say that before you die, you need to be able to spend all your money? It's like, he's saying, don't die with all your wealth. Is that what he's saying? And a lot of people think that way now. They go, oh, you know, I need to enjoy the money that I've worked for my entire life. It's my money. I worked for it. I can spend it how I want so that I can enjoy my life. Never mind my children or my children's children. This is about me. No, Jesus isn't saying that. He's not trying to get us to worry about whether or not we're able to spend our money in our own lifetime. Rather, Jesus is concerned that you will live to regret your wealth. The irony is that we think having more stuff gives us independence. You know, we hear terms like being independently wealthy. What does it mean to be independently wealthy? It means to be enough on our own, to not need anybody else, to never have to ask for a handout. We think having more stuff gives us this independence. Instead, what happens? The stuff that we own, it begins to own us. We become dependent on our wealth. We become dependent on our addiction to getting more stuff, to live it, trying to live the life that we think that we want. And Jesus' point is hauntingly clear. You were not made to run on wealth. You were made to run on God. There is no life apart from God, apart from a committed relationship to Him. If you don't stay on guard, you will fall for this scam and you will be left with nothing. What do you stand to lose? Everything, Jesus says. You stand to lose all your heavenly riches. And let's consider the parable further. Let's break it down a little bit. Where exactly does this man go wrong? There's nothing in this parable to say that God hates rich people. It's just a fact. It's stated as a fact that here's a guy in a certain scenario, in a certain story, and he happens to be rich. This is just a story about a rich guy. And neither does there seem to be anything wrong with the fact that his land produces plentifully. God isn't sitting there blaming him for making a lot of money, for producing a good crop. I mean, for all we know, that might have been a blessing from God to that man. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with being rich. God doesn't condemn him for making money. In fact, the rich man has a unique opportunity. And this is where the parable gets interesting. Because he asks himself a very important question. And it's a question that we should all be asking ourselves when we find ourselves in similar situations. What does he ask? He says, "What shall I do? I've got more than I need. I've got more than my barns can hold." And he asks this question, "What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops." What shall I do? He's left in this place of... He's asking himself this question. The problem he has is in the next part. It's in the way that he answers that question. "I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry." And what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Ask the question, who is this man serving? Who is this man serving in the way that he handles his wealth? Is he looking out for anybody else other than himself? Obviously not. It wasn't even a consideration in his mind as to other ways that he might want to use this wealth, his abundance. It's not even a consideration. He asks himself, "What should I do? Well, what do I want? I want to set up my life. I want to set up my life for myself." Notice that the rich man takes over the narration as well. The man in the parable, he excludes others from the story. Notably God. He excludes God from the story. It becomes about what he will do to preserve his life. He thinks he can create his own paradise through the present comfort of his wealth. He tries to narrate the story his way. He takes control. He asks, "What will I do? Which direction should I take this story now?" The rich man pushes God out of the story, and in so doing, arguably, he's denying God's existence. He's denying God's hand in any of it. He's denying the reality that everything he owns comes from God. Every breath he takes comes from God. He's totally pushed God out of the story. Those who act selfishly and do not see the other are the ones who store up treasures for themselves on earth and are not rich towards God. But what does God do? He steals the narration back. And it's not good news for this man, because he's invested everything he has into his life, the comfort of his life. But what he doesn't know is that this very night, he's going to lose it all. And if we want to be rich toward God, how should we relate to our possessions, our material possessions? The answer is in the context, which we get later in the chapter, in verse 33. It says, "Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys." The context that Jesus tells the parable in is that the issue with this guy is he's thinking about himself and he's not looking out. He's not seeing the needs in his community. He's not seeing the needs in his workplace, at his home. All he can see is himself. And that's the problem. And doesn't God see what we need? And doesn't he give to us joyfully? And likewise, shouldn't we be giving joyfully? If everything we have is from God as a gift, shouldn't we, in response to that, be giving to one another freely? And here's the thing. Giving to others is giving to God. If you want, have a look in Matthew 25. 35 to 40. Matthew 25, 35 to 40. Have a look at what Jesus says. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly, I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. Have a look also in Proverbs. Proverbs 19:17. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. Most of us here are wealthy. That's the reality. We live in a wealthy country. It's a rich country. It's a blessed country. The wealthy person who stores up treasure for himself looks something a little bit like this, right? You know, they've got their money bag and they can't take their eyes off their money bag. And the only time they ever look up is that they're looking out of the corner of their eye to see where there might be more wealth, more stuff that I want, more money, and they're taking and they're putting it in their bag. And even though they've got more than they'll ever need, more than they'll ever even know that they'll use in their lifetime, they're taking for themselves. On the other hand, the wealthy person, so the materially wealthy person who is rich toward God, is rich, has money, has wealth, with an eye toward God. They walk around with their possessions looking for needs. Their eyes aren't down looking inward at themselves. Their eyes are looking outward. And they're seeing other people. They're seeing the struggles of other people. They're recognizing that what they have right now, all this stuff, is just ammunition to bless other people. It's given by God to be a blessing to others. It's what we've been trusted with. And the person who's wealthy with an eye toward God isn't just taking, they're taking out. They're taking out of the coin purse and they're seeing the other and they're giving. And what are they doing? What does Jesus tell us that that person is doing in their generosity? They're building up treasures for themselves in heaven. It's not just about them. Their lives are more concerned with the needs of other people, the needs of Jesus, than they are concerned with their own needs, with maintaining control, setting their lives up, trying to preserve their lives. Jesus says, you're foolish if you do that. Almsgiving is an expression to the world that Christians don't need to protect their wealth to live. we demonstrate how we rely on God, not money. At least that's what we're supposed to do. And do we? Are we wealthy? Is our relationship to our wealth outwardly focused? Are we seeing the other people around us in our community, in our church, in our workplace, everywhere we go? Or are our jobs, are the ways in which we accumulate wealth, inwardly focused? Are we only looking toward ourselves? Do we trust God to provide for us? Jesus' parable should jolt us out of our foolishness. Few of us are foolish enough to fall for an online email scam. But many of us are fooled when we behave as though our lives consist of money and things. The foolishness of covetousness comes at the price of your heavenly riches. And Jesus pleads with us, don't be scammed. Don't fall into that mistake.